Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Recovery from Relapse meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Today it is Tuesday, the 17th of June, 2025, and I'm absolutely delighted today to welcome the lovely Abby D. Abby first came into OA in 2016. She is from Michigan and is currently, I think, residing there still. She'll tell you now on her experience, strength, and hope. Take it away, Abby.
Thank you so much, Rita. Hi, everyone. I'm Abby D. I'm a recovered compulsive eater bulimic in Michigan in the U.S. I'm grateful to have met Rita at the birthday party, and just thank you for bringing so much love and energy to this program. So, hi, everyone. I'm glad to be here. Speaking today on recovery from relapse, I'm just going to focus on like how relapse has played out in my story and how I've gotten through it. So today, next month I'll have 7 years of complete abstinence. So I still say 6 years because it hasn't been seven yet. It's been that 6 years since I had that like horrendous relapse. So I did come into Overeaters Anonymous in 2016, like Rita said. Growing up, I had like a lot of body awareness and like discomfort. I was overweight as a kid, you know, going like I was taller as a kid, and like I played basketball and I was chosen as like the forward. I wanted to be the point guard because the point guards are small and skinny and fast and, you know, shorter. And I was never that person. I learned bulimia early on from a friend, and I joined track and cross country and was just running. Like I found exercise around the same time as I started vomiting, and I had people say like, you're wasting away. And I just thought that was the greatest compliment ever, to be able to waste away with, you know, that's what I wanted to be. My weight went up and down, up and down. And when I went to college, I found amphetamines. So I got really thin using the amphetamines, exercise, bulimia, but I still wasn't like, it was really up and down, up and down. My mom was really worried. I had like major, major food binges. It was definitely progressive. I started like drinking and using drugs and like using other things to suppress my appetite, which got me in a lot of trouble. I eventually got sober in 2016, and when I put the alcohol down, when I put the amphetamines down, when I put the drugs down, put the cigarettes down, you know, I put all that stuff down, my food just really took off. Like I had absolutely no control over my food, and I just wanted something to take the edge off because I didn't know how to deal with life, and I found that in food. It was the only way I knew to cope. And I decided, you know, I'm starting over. I grew up in Michigan, which is in the Midwest of the US. And I'm speaking to the people who are not in the US. Anyways, I said, you know, I'm going to move to California. It's going to be a fresh start. I was like 30 days sober. People were telling me, don't make any big decisions. Of course, I was just making all the big decisions. And I moved out to California and I said, you know, I'm with sobriety, I'm just going to be this new person. I'm not going to be bulimic anymore. And of course, this was like a secret. I had never told anybody that at all. And I moved and I was baffled. I was really baffled that when I moved all the way across the country, I was face down in the toilet still, riding around to the fast food places, couldn't wait to get out of work so that I could go get this and that. It progressed really significantly. And I told someone in AA, you know, casually, Yeah, I don't know. I'm just like eating a lot. My food is really, like very glossed over what was actually happening behind closed doors. And she told me about Overeaters Anonymous, and I had never heard of it. And I went to my first meeting that night, and I heard people telling my story. I heard people talking about the excessive exercise, the overeating, the trying to throw things away, the multiple trips through the drive-through, the lying, the obsession. Like, the obsession of the mind was the worst, like the absolute worst. And I really related, and I jumped in head first. I do everything kind of with a bang. So I wanted to sponsor everyone. I wanted to tell everyone about my food plan. I started an Instagram about meal prepping. I just went in full force, and that's how I did it. So that was in 2016. I think everything's going great. Actually, I don't even think I had a food plan. I was abstaining-ish, and I was sending pic okay, yeah, I was sending pictures of my food, but I wasn't weighing and measuring. I was just sending pictures, so I was still deciding what I was eating. I was still making the decisions. I really was like doing a lot of service. I was sponsoring. I hadn't binged or purged, so like there was no purging. And for I think almost 2 years, I did that. I was speaking. I lived in Santa Barbara, so it was a really good recovery community. I would go into recovery houses and speak in there. And I was going to local fellowship. California has wonderful fellowship and meetings, and I would just walk to the meetings. There were multiple times a week, and I found that they were strong meetings where I was going. Although my strong at the time was a little different than it is today. But anyways, what happened, and it talks about this in the big book, is like there's these examples in chapter 3 of these mental states that precede a relapse into drinking. And one of them is a failure to enlarge their spiritual life. And there's a lot of ways that I failed to enlarge my spiritual life at the time. I was engaging in other addictions. Relationships was my other addiction at the time. I was, going from relationship to relationship. I was searching for a higher power and other things. I had resentments, ongoing resentments. I really wasn't finding a spiritual route for. So these resentments were bottling up. I was going on this meeting, and I started like the thought started coming into my mind of it's always the same speakers. Like, I'm like, it's always the same speakers. I hear the same people. And really, it's like I heard someone say the other day, like, I just didn't want to hear people that were recovered and I wasn't. I didn't feel the joy and happiness in my life. I was abstaining, but I don't know that I felt what they were feeling. And I started finding reasons to kind of walk my way out of those meetings. So these strong meetings that I was attending, I started finding fault with them. And then, that led me to believe, the world is wronging me. This is all too much. I should be able to eat like other people. Wouldn't it be nice? I don't want to have to do all of this. I can just have a little bit. It's fine, poor me. And I was on vacation. It was kind of like the perfect storm. I was up in Oregon visiting family, and this was in 2018. And I had all this emotional pent up stuff. Like, I just remember being a pent up ball of emotions during this time. I didn't have a car. I was staying at my aunt's house and my cousin's house, so I was on their schedule. I was trying to meal prep, but just kind of wanting. I remember the whole time wanting to eat like them, wanting to, it says one of the examples in the book is like, we don't, I think it was, is it Fred? The last example after the jaywalker, yeah, Fred, he didn't want to believe himself an alcoholic, much less accept a spiritual remedy for his problem. And that was me. I didn't want to believe. It's like I wanted to believe that I could eat like other people, and I didn't want to have to do all of this stuff. And so the thought crossed my mind suddenly, like it says in the big book, the thought crossed my mind that I could just add a little bit of something to my salad because I was adding it to a salad, just like, someone was adding the whiskey to their milk. And what happened that night is I was waiting for my family to, well, immediately after dinner, what eating with my family, I was in the kitchen grabbing this and that, going back to the table, then going back to the kitchen, grabbing this and that, waiting for them to go to bed so that I could raid my aunt and uncle's cabinets and eat whatever was in there. And, I just woke up in the morning thinking, oh gosh, like I have to replace this and that. I don't know where they got it. I don't even have a car. Just kind of like sulking all over my family with my attitude and my energy. And it was pretty hard to, I could say like, oh, like I'm not in relapse, but at some point, like I remember the point, I was face down in the toilet. I couldn't, once I was like vomiting, binging and vomiting, like I couldn't deny that I was in relapse. I called my sponsor crying and I said, I just threw up. I'm in way over my head here. Like I'm totally off the rails. And I had to let sponsees go. I had to start over. And I remember calling someone and just saying, like, I just need something. Like I'm desperate. I'm dying. I need something. And this person gave me a few people's phone numbers. And I called and I didn't even really know the people. I just called and said, like, will you help me? And it was a new surrender for me. I got a nutritionist. So I was no longer making decisions about what I was going to eat. I was beat into a state of reasonableness where I was willing to weigh and measure, which I was never willing to do before. I don't know how many times I called people. I think I ate too much. I think I'm not eating enough. I think I ate too much. I think I'm not eating enough. Like just da 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 da. And they'd be like, well, why don't you weigh and measure? No, I'm not weighing and measuring. Like, but it's just like that constant, like da 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 in my mind, And that was torture. That was absolute torture. So, anyways, I followed directions and I got my food in order. I was completely abstinent. I was not, if it was in the ingredients, I wasn't eating it. And I got really clear about what I could and couldn't eat. I was weighing and measuring. My sponsor said, just weigh and measure for 30 days. And I was like, okay, I can do that. And then, 6.5 years later, I'm still weighing and measuring because it gives me peace. And because I no longer have to think about, did I eat too much? Did I not eat enough? Da 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 da. Like it's just too much. So anyways, I followed directions and I worked the steps out of the big book. And it probably took like a month and a half. And there was some serious things that I had trouble getting over. I remember specifically thinking about step four. I got to step four and it was so painful looking at some of my relationships and where I had done harm. I mean, it was so painful. I really didn't want to face some things. There was some things I was ashamed of with my brothers and relationships broken. And, I was kind of estranged from my mom and dad. And, I was really, I was living in California, really far away from my family. And it was hard for me to look at those things. And I ended up picking up on step four. And I called my sponsor and I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm gonna binge. And she's like, call me when you're like, it's almost like she knew, and I knew that there was nothing that was going to stop me in that moment. Like there was just absolutely no human power that could relieve me in that moment. It's kind of like I knew it was going to happen, and I was just calling her to let her know. I don't know what I wanted her to do with that information, but She just said, call me back in a couple of days, you know, like, what if you're, if you're, if and when you're ready. And I called her back and I hunkered down. Like, when I got to step four, I knew it was coming, and I hunkered down and I said, you know, I got to get through this. Like, it's like I used willpower to get through the weekend and just do my fourth step. Like, I can't use willpower to keep me from eating, but I can use willpower to do the step work. And I did. Is that 15?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. So I hunkered down and I knew it was coming. And it was like, you know, and this is how it's been in my experience with working the steps, is when I'm on step four, that's what I'm doing. That it's not, hey, what's going on this week? Like, I'm doing my fourth step. That's all I'm doing pretty much, because I like to just get through it. And I did. I was able to see where I was wrong. I hunkered down on step, you know, I moved through the steps, got to step nine. I started making amends to people, really hard amends to some of my family members, really hard amends to some of my previous coworkers, my previous bosses. I made amends in my past relationships, but with my sponsor only. I wasn't about to bulldoze my way back into those situations. And, you know, I really did repair those relationships. Today, I have a really good relationship with my mom. I have a great relationship with my dad. It's not without troubles, but like, I'm showing up in the way that I think God would have me be. My brothers, like, we have a really great relationship. My brother comes and stays the night, calls me and says, hey, I'm on my way. What are you doing tomorrow? Can I stay the night? And it's just like, you know, we have a really great relationship, you know, and I'm not in toxic romantic relationships. I met my husband, I got married in recovery. I try to show up each day as, you know, the wife that God would have me be. And there's so much that has opened up. I lived in such a small world before recovery, and I came here to stop being bulimic. And what I got was so much more, you know, like, I can really sit with perfect, not perfect, but it says in the big book, like, we can be alone at perfect peace and ease. And that is true. Like, when I do my 30 minutes of meditation in the morning, I can really just sit and be. And there was a time I couldn't even sit for 5 minutes. I remember having Insight Timer on for 2 minutes, and I would be like, that is all I can do. And I can sit quietly with nothing, like, for 30 minutes and just, and probably longer, you know, but I just do 30 minutes and then, you know, I go on about my day. And that is the greatest gift. Like, the monkey madness in my mind, that being gone or arrested temporarily is the greatest gift. I say arrested temporarily because I still have a monkey mind, and my sponsor here knows. No, and when I do, I call her and then we laugh about it and we move on. And you know, it's like, I have to tell people what's going on between these two ears, because you know, I need to have complete honesty. I need to have complete honesty with my food. I need to have complete honesty, like, money-wise, like, cash register honesty. I'm not stealing from places. I'm not, you know, I have to be honest with my money. I have to be honest in my thinking. I really do have to tell on myself. Like, there's some things I call and I'm just like, let me tell you what I'm thinking right now. And you know, it's like, it's funny to me now because I know it's ridiculous sometimes. And I have to be honest when no one's watching. You know, like, when I'm at work and I'm working with kids, or I'm, you know, home alone and thinking about doing some, like, I have to be honest in all my behaviors. And even when no one is watching, I'm honest in my marriage. I love my husband. I try to do the best that I can. In the big book, it talks very specifically about our ideals in relationships. And if we fall short, it says, I'm just gonna go to that page. It says, Suppose we fall short. So from doing my inventory, like steps 4 through 9, I see where I've gone wrong, and I can see what I need to do instead. One of the parts of our harm inventory is to see like what could I have done better? What, and that's also like a question at the end of my day in my nightly review, what could I have done better? But it says here, suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean we're going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half truth. It depends on us and on our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and will have learned our lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. So if I'm acting in a way that's harmful to others, if I'm putting out negative energy to other people, if I'm, snapping at my husband, if I'm yelling at the kids I work with, if I'm cutting people off in traffic, if I'm, barking at people at the grocery store to hurry up, if I'm yelling at people on like the customer service people on the phone, like how I treat people is really important because it says that if I fall short, if I'm not sorry, if I don't have that like guilty conscience where I'm trying to do better and the honest desire to let God take me to better things, then I'm gonna go out. And so I remember that when I say something rude to my husband and the look on his face, I realize I hurt his feelings. And I'm like, oh, so I tell my sponsor, I read it on my nightly review. I admit I'm wrong. And then I ask, is there anything I can do to make it up to you? And here's what I'm going to try to do differently. And, saying that out loud really helps me not do it again. Sometimes it takes me multiple times, but, if I'm honestly sorry and have the desire to let God take me to better things, then I'll be forgiven and I'll learn my lesson. There's been a lot of lessons I've learned throughout this past 6 years. I've made some really big mistakes. I made a really big mistake. Well, I think it was a mistake in a relationship with my dad, and it was hard to make that right. But I've made it right, and I have a living amends each day to have God help me show up to be the daughter that he wants me to be. And, I take that very seriously. So, and like I have people in my life that will call me on stuff, my sponsor especially. Well, it was great. She came and met my husband. Now she's on definite team John Paul. But I'm grateful for people that show me how to live in the world and how to be kind to the people around me, because that's not something that I knew I would get, but it's something I have to do to stay in recovery today. Like I can't be abstinent and running around like a crazy person, like that's just not gonna get me long-term abstinent. So I hang out with people who have what I want. I go to meetings that have strong recovery. I look for what other people are doing in their relationships, in their jobs, in their lives, and I follow through on my commitments. So I started going to Cornwall every weekend. It's a Zoom meeting, and then I started going to Miracles every Tuesday, but Cornwall on Saturday is my home group, and that's where I am on Saturdays. Like unless I have something going on that's really important, like every weekend, that's where I am on Saturday, and my camera's on, and I look forward to seeing my friends, and I try to share to be of service. And it's like I have to fight to be in the center of the herd, because if I'm not in the center of the herd, like I'm gonna get picked off. It's so easy. The mental states that precede a relapse into eating, they're so insidious. And they can happen so fast. It happens like first with, why I don't have to go to that meeting, or why I don't need to turn my camera on, or why it's okay for me to cancel with my sponsees, or why it's okay for me to, whatever. But it starts with those first thoughts about why I don't need to XYZ. And I'm grateful today. Like I was really thinking about being here. Like last night I was thinking about being here. And I'm just grateful to be able to tell the story of living through relapse. Like there's people that don't come back from relapse. And it's really sad, you know. I see people come in and go out and come in and go out, and
That's
I
funny.
don't know. Thank you so much. I don't know what it is about why God is helping me have this like willingness to be honest and go to any length, but it's like it got so bad. It got so bad. And like I don't wear this disease on my outsides. Like I was never really overweight. I was up and down, but like to me, this was a spiritual disease that really took me to the absolute bottom. Like the mental obsession was horrible, the pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, the hiding from my family, the small life I lived, the hiding, the shades drawn, trying to find a bathroom, like lying constantly. I wasn't living for anything else. Like that's such a small world. I was just basically living to get alone so that no one could see what I was doing. And today I have a full life. Like even in hard times, I find solace in knowing that I have a 12-step program, that I have God in my life, that no matter what, I'll be okay. That like the feeling that I get from my higher power is a comfort that I never knew before. I was trying to seek comfort in other people's validation and other people telling me I'm okay or, you know, complimenting me or whatever. And today, like, I can really be okay knowing that I have a higher power. I do two-way prayer also. So, like, for me, if I have a question or a doubt or I'm not really sure what to do in this situation, I take it to prayer. And I ask God, like, what do I do in this situation? What would you have me be? And I just write what God would have me be. And I think from being in a recovered state, the connection to my higher power is strong. So I find that I get answers, and it's a comforting answer. Like it's something that I can actually really live with, and I don't have to be racing around asking everyone what to do. So, anyways, I'm grateful to be here with you all. I'm grateful to be on summer break so that I can be here on a Tuesday at 9 a.m. And I think that's all I have to share, and I pass.
Oh, Abby, thank you so much. What a beautiful message to depth and width. I'm just going to read a little paragraph out of the big book on page 475, twice gifted. It says, "But the miniature transformation has been spiritual. The hopelessness has been replaced by abundant hope and sincere faith. The people of AA have provided a haven where if I remain aware and keep my mind quiet enough, my higher power leads me to amazing realizations. I find joy in my daily life and being of service and simply being. I have found rooms full of wonderful people. And for me, each and every one of the Big Book's promises have come true. The things that I've learned from my own experience from the Big Book and from my friends in AA or OA, patience, acceptance, honesty, humility, and true faith in a power greater than myself are the tools I use to live today, to live my life, this precious life. Today, my life is filled with miracles, big and small, not one of which would ever have come to pass had I not found the door of Alcoholics Anonymous."